Well, hello dear listener, and welcome to this special solo roundtable episode of Making It Women of Film, a podcast where I sit down with women working across the film and TV industry to learn their story and hear all about their craft, career, and vigorous resilience. My name is Savita, and I'm very excited to bring you this episode today, produced by Bonnie and Brian and Alice Films, to you. Now, we had some technical issues with the interview segment of this episode, so what we've decided to do until we work those kinks out is we're going to give you our roundtable, which is hosted by myself and Lauren San Miguel, who's our researcher and media assistant. We kind of expand a bit more on our last roundtable, which you can listen to at the end of episode 61, and we dive a bit more into the representation of love, the representation of love between queer people, mixed people, friends, lovers, and so on. I really hope you enjoyed. It was a great talk, and I really like going into more specific details of representation and kind of honing in on different elements of it. If you want to stay tuned to find out when the interview this week is going out, you just need to click subscribe wherever you're listening, hit the bell to get your notifications, or follow us on Instagram at Making It Women in Film, where we will announce it as soon as it is up. Thank you so much for your patience, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Should have a jingle for this. Do you agree?
Like, what kind of a jingle? Like, ba da da da. Like, when you're.
Like a round table.
Oh, yeah, like a choir.
Round table.
Not choir.
Round table. Well, anyway, there you go, folks. There's your jingle.
No, please don't put that in there. Please don't. I was gonna do like a screamer one, like, round table, but let's not do that either.
Oh no, that's even better. Just scream at them. Like, out of nowhere, the interview ends, they think they're done. Round table! Okay, well, I mean, I don't even know if we could call it a round table. We're just currently two people. But the idea is for
two
it to
people.
Be a round table with three people. Yeah. I'm, as always, your host, Evita.
And I'm Lauren.
Why should they care? Who are you?
They shouldn't. Right off of the bat, they shouldn't. It's so random, I'm on here, really.
So, anyway, you just listened to my interview with Carmen Thompson, and I hope you really enjoyed it, because I did, and I just realized that I'm not recording on my phone.
I am.
So I'm going to go do that now. So for everyone listening, there's going to be a bit of a jump. And one, two, three. Now the audio should be better. Actually, before we get into our main topic of today's roundtable, I do want to make a quick correction. Because I mentioned when we're talking about early movies, I mentioned that I remember being in the parking lot after watching Babe. I don't remember watching Babe. And the reason I don't remember watching Babe is because I don't think I ever watched Babe, and I certainly was never in the parking lot after watching Babe, because it came out in 1995 and I'm born in 2002. Turns out the movie was Charlotte's Web, which makes a lot more sense since I was 4 years old. So I'm sorry to all of the pig movies for the confusion. I sincerely didn't mean to do it. It was Charlotte's Web, and I will make an effort to watch Babe when I can. So moving on from that correction, what we saw in this conversation, as well as our last interview with Corinna, is that the matter of representation is again so greatly needed, and internationally at that as well. Carmen's work is so heavily focused on bringing movies from Africa into the UK and bringing them to audiences that haven't seen them before, bringing them to African audiences in the UK who have had access to them. Working on movies like The Gravedigger's Wife, which is the first Somali movie to ever be put out. Working on movies like Rafiki, which was a groundbreaking Kenyan movie about a queer, beautiful queer love story. And I remember watching that as well. And if we're just going to jump straight into it, we want to talk a bit more about representation, because we kind of touched on it in the last episode, but then we had to cut it a little bit short. I had to edit it down, and we want to get to some more points we've had in the meantime, because this is something that cannot be wrapped up in 10 or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But the story between the two lead women, and their relationship is incredibly beautiful. And love is something that we do not see represented enough, and it is one of those aspects where we can go from beyond just an identity itself, a description, and onto actual emotions. Moving on from the representation of an identity to a fully formed person, to their relationship with others, is an aspect that still needs to be explored and I don't know what the right word is, but like found, because I don't think a lot of people.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean, right? Like people, and I don't, okay, in defense of checklist diversity, people are getting hired, people are getting paid, people are coming on the screen and they're getting credit so they can go on to something better. It sucks. It's not the best way to do it. But I would rather have checklist diversity than a fully white cast.
At least it's happening.
You know? So like, at least, you know, some people, the actors, are getting, I mean, I'm just thinking for the actors.
It's like what we can get, yeah.
At least they can, you know, get some money, you know, like it's, as long as people get paid, like that's also very important to me. So anyway, while you have checklist diversity, which isn't great, but I have my slight defense of it, there needs to be more focused on the, like, entirety of diversity and its relations with others, and you had some thoughts on that, so I'll let you take the boat, I don't know, wheel, take the wheel.
Okay, the boat. I'm taking the boat. Right, so something that always kind of, that I was thinking about recently, because it's on UK Netflix right now, is the movie Fools Russian, which, yeah, so it stars Salma Hayek and Matthew Perry, and it's about a, like, white guy who lives in the US, and he's, like, working, I think he's, like, he develops, like, houses or something like that, I don't know, and he meets Salma Hayek, who's, like, this, like, really outgoing Mexican woman, and they basically fall in love, because they hook up one night, and she ends up pregnant, and they get, like, married and together and whatnot. And what's really interesting is that, like, that's one of my dad's favorite movies, because my dad, an American, he came to work in Mexico City when he was working for AT&T, met my mom, who is a really outgoing Mexican woman, so it's, like, it was, he always just really liked that movie because he felt like it was really close to his own relationship, and it was just kind of close to home. And even though, like, their love story is just a little different, as we kind of talked about it last episode for some reason, I think it kind of got me thinking about how important it is for mixed race couples. When it comes to mixed race couples, like, I think seeing themselves in film and seeing, like, their relationship and something similar like that develop in film, it's quite beautiful to see, because, like, you don't really think about that perspective, you know, of, like, two people falling in love, getting over a language barrier, getting over a cultural barrier. And it's honestly one of the most interesting things to see, is just, like, when people see, well, their relationship somewhere, you know, and it's represented nicely, and they can identify with that. And I think about that, like, in, like, the POC version of this, like, my mom, you know, like, she has, like, her thoughts on it and everything, and she likes the movie as well, because she also just identifies with, like, meeting a really, like, kind of introverted white man, and then she's just, you know, and I'm walking exclamation point, and it was just, it also kind of hits a little home, close to home with her. And I think that when you think about it, like, in the perspective of the white person, usually, like, what I've seen is, like, in the American one, I think it really shows them, like, a completely different kind of window to romantic possibilities as well. Because, and I don't know who listens to these, so I think I'm just gonna just kind of go over this really quick. I know people that are my parents' age who were told by their parents that they couldn't date people of a specific race. And they never, that those people never really found anything wrong with that, you know, and they never understood why when they were younger. But I think, like, when you as a younger person don't see anything wrong with that and you're told not to do it, it kind of hurts you a little bit, you know, because it limits like your feelings and it limits your, you know, what you can explore and not explore, right? So I think that seeing all these love stories and seeing how even if it might be wrong, quote unquote wrong, it doesn't have to be, you know, like you can do whatever you want if you want to. And sorry, this is kind of like all over the place,
so
but
much stigma. Yeah.
It's just like, I think it's just really important to show that, because it's, I feel like a lot of people still don't allow it, if you know what I mean. Like it's just like really weird that people still don't think that, like,
that should be a thing.
Completely
and wholeheartedly agree. Because there's still like a lot of stigma, but it's not something that's talked about anymore, mm-hmm. because the general consensus is it shouldn't be, mm-hmm. but I feel like this still hasn't been done the work to kind of erase that.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the ones that I've seen, which are still important, are like these horrible films where like people of two different races fall in love and they have to like do so much to get over it and one of them dies or something. And I know that that's true, like that has happened before, especially like in the US and everything, but I feel like it's also nice just to see like films about like just really nice wholehearted films about two people of different races falling in love, because I think that like, you know, it's not always like suffering. Sometimes like the struggle is just like I said, language barriers itself, you know, or like maybe one of them moves to a different country, you know, and they have to like adapt to that different country. And that's a whole different struggle where then also like that representation is also needed, you know, where it's like, what's it like for you to be coming from a completely different country to a new one where you don't speak the language, you don't know anything about it, you know? So I think it's just, there's a lot of different conversations when it comes to the science of representation in marriage. I've actually got a really good example of a different movie that isn't just Fool's Russian, which is just a rom-com. So there's that movie Belle, and it's a really nice movie because it was based off of real life, where it was the daughter of, the illegitimate daughter of a Navy admiral is trained and brought up by her aristocratic uncle and his wife. However, she is mixed race, so they kind of just have her there as like a companion to their actual niece, who's just, you know, mm-hmm. a white girl. But eventually, obviously, they absolutely adore her and they, you know, raise her up as a daughter and everything. But, you know, living in that century, there were like certain aspects where like they had her eating with like the help and everything and so on and so forth. But it was actually, it's such a beautiful movie because she was so intelligent, and she's, you know, talking about like this case about some cargo ship dumping slaves in the ocean and everything, and she falls in love with a lawyer who's like apprenticing for her uncle. And even though like it depicts the struggle of like a woman of mixed race back then courting, if you will, a white man, it's honestly one of the most romantic movies I've ever seen. Like, and I know this happened in like real life, I don't know how accurate it was, but like, it was so beautiful. I mean, oh my God. Like, it was just so great. And I think that that's like another really good example of like how these movies usually only depict like, oh, we had to die in order for us to be together. You know, we were buried together in the end. And it's like, that's so horrible. You know, like, I know that probably happened, but, you know, and like, even though, you know, back then the struggle to marry somebody who was any race different than yours, especially like mixed race, was absolutely, it was impossible to do, you know, they managed to do it and it was great. And then in the movie, like the way it depicted it, it, you know, it showed the struggle of it, but they were in love and it was freaking good at showing that, you know. It was a really romantic movie. And also Tom Felton is in it as some racist weirdo, like he's horrible in that, but it makes, he does it very well, I'll say that. Yeah, it's just like too well done. But
oh no.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what do you think you want to see more of in terms of love stories?
I want to see I think of love stories, definitely more queer ones as well, where it's not like
just a white blonde and brunette.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why is it always that?
It's that's their diversity right there.
I'm like, my God.
I want to see two women, like, genuinely falling in love. And, oh, God, actually, okay, there's this movie called Summerland that I watched one day when I was cooking with my mom a gazillion months ago. And at first I was like, ew, I don't want to watch this, but it's actually really good. It's got Gemma Arterton in it and Gugu Mbatha-Raw as well. And it's basically this recluse writer, like, in World War II in some place in England. And obviously she gets like a kid sent to her because, you know, they were like sending kids away and everything. And she's like, ew, I don't want this kid. And they're like, well, you have to take care of it, you know, so suck it up. And she's like really bitter, really, really, really bitter because she was in love with a woman. And it's basically this whole thing. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it's quite beautiful and it's queer and it's got two women, one of them being a person of color, not just a blonde and a brunette. So please watch Summerland. I cried so much. It was such a beautiful movie. Like, please go watch it. Anyway, so I think, like I said, I would love to see more, like, queer love stories. And I don't, and I've said this before, I don't want porny lesbian movies. I refuse to watch any that have graphic sex scenes in it. Because, like, sometimes when you see, like, movies about gay men, they're not usually having graphic sex on screen as much as women are. And I think we all know, like, why that is. Like you said, just not a blonde and not a brunette anymore. Like, we need more, just, like, a good salt, just a good, you know, well-rounded relationship. Mm. And then I think I would, because obviously what's really great about, you know, movies nowadays is that, like, obviously people have a bunch of mixed-race couples on screen quite a bit, which is really good. I would love to see more, like, cross-hopping relationships, just because I think that would be really fun, and I love that, because I love the plot line of, like, oh, I can't speak Italian, or, like, just something dumb. Like, I love that. That's just me. That's just a personal preference. Like, oh, no, like not Emily in Paris.
Sorry,
like,
that's
not
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I want to see more of, like, I love seeing bamboozled white men in other countries. I think it's great because I think it kind of, like, I don't know, to me, it's just like, I think it makes the woman, like, seem better, because I feel like constantly if it's like a white man and a woman of color, the white man is still smarter all the time. And it's like, no. So I think it's really nice when, like, they're in the other country.
And it's done, like, in a tasteful way where they're not making fun of the new culture that they're facing.
Yeah, because, exactly.
There is definitely also a genre of mixed race romantic movies which are done so just because they want a little bit diversity, but they didn't want full diversity. I think it'd be nice to always see more mixed race couples where one party is not white, because you can have that, surprisingly.
No, sorry, that's just like
no, that wasn't to you. I was just like, in general, I feel like people are mixed race, okay, one white person and then one somebody else, you know.
They're just so,
yeah, it's like, yeah, you don't have to do it like that. And, like, I'm sure somebody's going to bring up, what about fetishization? I think you can tell, like, exactly what we were talking about, like, a lot of lesbian romantic movies directed by men. Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
You can tell, and those suck.
Yeah.
And they need to be eradicated because they're not doing anything either else. You know, like, they're not, you know, like, okay, they might be bringing down stigma a little bit, I guess, but then they're creating, like, an interest in other people for the wrong reasons. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, are a lot of, like, who's watching those films more? Women or men? And then you're like, that's a suspicious
amount. Yeah, and also for, like,
why.
And also for, like, other cultures, you know, where, like, Latina women and Asian women have been really fetishized, you know, in the media. So, but we need representation behind the scenes to make that happen. Like, that's where it comes from. You see the issues when those movies come up, you look at who made them, and it's very apparent. Like, it's very, very easy to find out where the issue happened. And that's not to say that, you know, straight white men can't make good movies about other people.
It's just they're usually bad.
It's not to say that. But the majority of people who make movies like that, yeah, like,
it's not to say that, you know, if you're listening and you do fall into that category and you do want to make an amazing queer POC love story, it doesn't say you can't do that, but you should involve queer POC people in it.
Yeah, I agree completely. Because it's really, that's all that really takes, you know. But actually, yeah, now that I think about it, like, the only, when it comes to, like, two people, like, two different POCs dating, there is just one white person there to, I guess, represent the entire white population. Like, I don't know what it's there for. Because, like, I mean, even me talking about it, the only examples I gave were that, because it's the only examples I can think of. There's this movie that I haven't seen, so, like, I don't even know what it's called. We'll look into it. But I think it's also based on real life, where a white woman goes to Africa.
Does that sound? Sorry.
She dates. Yeah, exactly. And she is in Africa for some reason, and he was, like, the leader of, like, their group. But he was, like, a prince, and basically she lives there with them for a while, and she runs away with their daughter, and I can't remember what it's called, but I remember my mom saw it once.
Oh, is it Anna the King from 1999, perhaps? It looks... Anna, a teacher assigned to teach King Munkut's children, finds her life changing when she falls in love with the king. Could that be it?
Yeah, that's the one. I haven't seen it yet either, but I know it's there because I was, like, looking at some of them.
Oh, and Tom Felton is in this one. Was that the one you were talking about?
He's in both? Well, I was just talking about Belle. Him, Tom Felton.
Oh, that's really weird. No, Anna Leonovans, Jodie Foster, a British widow, has come to Siam with her son Louis, Tom Felton.
Oh, well, look at him. Range.
How do we wrap that up?
Well, representation matters. Love is beautiful.
Love is beautiful.
Representation
and
love.
Love.
I want to see people in love, okay? Love.
Love is important.
Yes.
Relationships are important. I don't know. It's probably just a phase that a lot of people go through, but I hated romance in movies growing up.
Same. It was
so much. I hated it every single time. Like, I remember watching Wonder Woman, and not even, like, I was so, and when I came out, I was like, oh my god, it's so amazing, they weren't even together. And then I rewatched it and I was like, wait, they kissed? I didn't, like, I blocked it out. Yeah. Like, I was like, that didn't happen because we need this, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I do think there needs to be relationships, like, specifically friendships between, like, men and women in movies.
Oh, yeah, just
that's
solid
just never there.
Friendship.
So I think that's where that...
Friendship, love.
Friendship, like, in Shang-Chi.
Oh, my god, freaking love Shang-Chi.
Love
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So friendships and relationships and, you know, platonic love
Ooh.
Needs to be in there as well.
Brotherly
we can
love.
Go into that another...
Right,
like,
I just had a really good
exactly.
movie. I can't remember what it's called. Hang on, I'm going so fast. Okay, Luis Gerardo Mendez is in this movie called Half Brothers. It came out in 2020. I don't know where you can watch it. I saw it in theaters a long time ago. But it's really cute. It's about a brother who... lives in Mexico. He doesn't talk to his dad because his dad left to go find work illegally in the U.S. and he finds out that the dad died or something, and he finds his half-brother, and they go through a cross-country Mexico U.S. trip, and they are in love, like, because they're brothers. They love each other so much, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I loved it more than anything.
I
cried so much. It was great.
I love that. Yeah, and I was actually just thinking, you know, like, also, you know, I think what you will see when you have, like, diversity on screen is friendships. But you never really see, like, a friendship storyline. Like, I want a romantic movie about best friends. I want to see them become best friends. You don't have that. They are just best friends.
Mm.
And you don't, like,
you don't see
talk
that development.
About, like, you don't see the development. You don't see how they meet each other's, like, backgrounds and things like that at all. And I want to see
that.
Yeah,
because, like... For example, like, our friendship is so lovely, and it was so unlikely, and, like, even that is so nice.
Yes.
Like, if you think about it, I mean, I DM'd her a picture of Obama, Broccoli Obama. Like,
yes.
It's just, no one talks about that in movies. It's, like, how wonderful friendships are. Yeah, sure, you can do anything with the power of friendship, but no one talks about how it gets there. And it's quite lovely because it's just as, you know, endearing. It's just as heartwarming, and it can be just as thrilling as, like, friggin' Pride and Prejudice. It's just for life SD.
I need to find out if there is, like, an actual, like, and obviously you have, like,
enemies to friends, but that's not the same.
Yeah,
I want, no, like, not. I just want, like, a I just want a movie written exactly like a love story, but about best friends. I just, I want that really bad. Yeah, platonic love is so important as well. It just, and what I'm saying is not, like, that every single movie should be this or that. No, I'm saying we need, like, a very wide variety. Like, we need a diversity of diverse stories.
Experience.
So there's no mascots or anything like that. And that's how you also, like, get rid of stereotypes. So
Beverly Hills Chihuahua is a really good example of that as well.
Great.
Well, I stand by that. Yeah, that's what I'm here to give. It's just really niche movie recommendations.
Yes,
except
I love
Beverly Hills Chihuahua is quite well known. So. I need to stop.
Okay, so to wrap this up, I guess, have you been watching anything interesting that you want to talk about? I haven't watched anything since we last talked. I don't think I've watched a movie, which is really sad. I don't think... I'm watching Mythic Quest Season 3. Would highly recommend. It's really fun. It's about, like... video game developers.
Okay.
So they're developing this video game, and it has great representation, and I really, I think I might write something about this, but then the last thing I wrote was about how I hadn't written for like a year, and I haven't written anything since that, and that was like 3 months ago. So I don't know. I just thought that was really funny. But they have I love the women in there because they're so annoying and shitty and just like they're annoying people, but in the best way. And like they're not like likable all the time. Like they will have likable traits. Like you like them because they're good characters, but you would never want to be friends with them, like ever. Except for like Dana, because she's
just like
amazing. Love her. But like, yeah, a wide variety of annoyingness. Like you have one of the developers, Poppy Lee, the main developer. She's played by Charlotte Nikdow. Yeah, in the show, like she's a very particular developer. Like she just is very obsessed with her craft, and she's incredibly annoying. She does not have social skills, and not in a cute and quirky way, in a way where it would be infuriating to interact with her in real life and work for her. But they also show like all these like creatives in power, and then they like will go to them talking with like the graphic designers being like, I've worked for 40 days straight, you know, like please do not do this to me. And so you see these characters, which you like, they're funny, it's a comedy, you know, you're laughing along with them. But then you realize if you were actually in the situation, it would be hell. And also this is the situation for so many creatives out there, whether it is in video games, in writing, in filmmaking, like this is the thing where you will have geniuses and their genius ideas. And then, my God, the people who are actually making that happen are suffering because of it.
I feel like that's a good example. I've been thinking about Hans Zimmer quite a bit. He cannot be writing all of those pieces himself. I know we all know this, but I never know who is. And I'm always like, oh God, I love Hans Zimmer. Like, I just like eat his music. And is it really his?
Like when you're doing so much, how do you really do it? Like,
yeah, like James Patterson. Why does he write so many books?
Like Elon Musk. Why is the CEO of like three companies?
Yeah.
And if they're still like intact, surely he doesn't do anything, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, who is? Like, who are these people? Like, I know Hans Zimmer just walks into the studio and goes, I want Pirate Song. And they're like, okay, Pirate Song. You know, like, I know that's probably what that's
Hans
like.
But ghostwriter. Oh, yeah.
No, I wouldn't be. I would die. I would kill myself if everyone was like, oh, I love Hans Zimmer. Prince of Egypt was so freaking good.
I love Shark
Tale. And I'm just like... Yeah. I always forget about Shark Tale, dude. I blocked that. Right. Yeah.
But anyway, I've just been watching Mythic Quest. That is the only thing, like, new thing that I can mention since last episode. Yeah, it's good. You should all watch it. It's an Apple TV show, so watch it where you can. Wink, wink.
Because we were talking about diversity last week, I went ahead and watched Spanglish with Adam Sandler, which I think is like one of the most normal movies he's been in. That's just, you know. And Spanglish is an excellent example of this entire conversation, so go watch Spanglish, or I will find you and force you to watch it.
It's beautiful. It's about an immigrant mother, and it's kind of in the point of view of her daughter, who like grows up, and she's writing, I think, her college essay, which is like so slay of her, and using that situation for that. And her mom cleans houses, you know. Adam Sandler's a chef. You think they're gonna end up together, but they don't, and that's actually quite nice. But obviously, there's like a big language barrier. It's beautiful. I love it with my whole heart. I forgot to talk about it last week, but it is a fantastic example of this week's conversation. So please go watch it.
Amazing. Now. I do love love stories as well where they don't meet up with each other, like, or don't end up with each other.
Actually, I don't like that.
I mean, it's excruciating, but I think it's like the great story. Yeah, but I don't like that pain. Like, I wish that's what they'd done with When Harry Met Sally, but they didn't do that because they were...
No, yeah, because no, I disagree. I have to disagree with that because I will kill myself if they don't. Like in Wonder Woman, we don't talk about the second movie, but like the first movie, like, no, that was too much for me. That was too much that they weren't in love for.
Oh, I loved that though. Like, I literally, I loved it so much. I erased the parts that were there.
No.
Well, it's been great talking with you, Lauren.
You're welcome.
Great. Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Making It Women in Film, a podcast produced by Bonnie and Brawl and LS Films. If you want to support this podcast, you can do so by subscribing to us wherever you're listening and leave a review or a rating. It'll only take you a few clicks, but it'll mean the world to us. You can also check out our website, womeninfilm.co.uk, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Making Women in Film, and feel free to shoot us an email at makingwomeninfilm@gmail.com if you have any questions or inquiries or anything at all, and we'll try to get back to you. Alright, guess I'll just see you next week. Bye.